book of Jeremiah. We'll be beginning in chapter 27. Tell you what, on a night like this, two big families make a big difference. And the Colemans and the Thompsons make up about a third of our congregation tonight. Those two families. Ten folks right there. That's good. Good. It's bad that they make up that much because there aren't more here. That doesn't mean to belittle those of us who are in smaller families and those that are just one or some who are just two. They make a difference as well. But sometimes you see a big family make such a big difference in the way the auditorium looks. Just to have a couple of pews filled up. Alex, how many destiny be here tonight? well, that's about right. The prognosticating ability put to the test again and again. We've covered the first half of Jeremiah, and we're going to move through the third section tonight, chapters 27 through 39. If you have that, you can see the breakdown of the section there from chapter 27 through chapter 39, and we'll be looking at a few specific verses. We start with the fact, nothing new, if we've been paying attention to what Jeremiah has had to say. Judah's going to serve Nebuchadnezzar. Judah is going to go into Babylonian captivity. There's no doubt about it. Jeremiah doesn't take any doubts about that. He doesn't have any doubts. The Lord doesn't have any doubt. It's just a matter of time at this point. So in chapter 27, we see in verse 2, thus saith the Lord to me, make thee bonds and yoke, and put them upon thy neck. You ever had a yoke on your neck? I never have. How many of you have ever seen the yoke that they put on oxen's neck? Not too awful many even of that had that. But it's one of the big, big pieces of wood. Heavy, heavy. Solid wood. Not this fake stuff that they have nowadays. Real solid wood. Big, thick beam. And so God tells Jeremiah, you go out and make you a yoke, or get you a yoke made like the ones that they use for oxen. And he said, you put that around your neck. Put it up on your neck. And so here's Jeremiah carrying this big yoke on his neck, and he's chained into it because he says also, make the bonds. Chains, in other words. So he chained himself to this big yoke. If I could have found one, I'd have brought one tonight, but I didn't have any idea where to find one of those things. Hadn't seen one any time recently. So here it is, this big chunk of wood across here, and he's carrying that around. Can you imagine that's going to be a sight? People see that, they're going to think something's going on with this fellow. Because that's not the kind of thing that you usually would walk around with. So he does that. He makes that, and he carries it around, and he's warning everyone of the coming captivity. And he spake, verse 12 says, also to Zedekiah, king of Judah, according to all these words, saying, bring your neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon and serve him and his people and live. You got a choice here. And it's not a pleasant choice. It gives in to these kinds of choices a lot of times. Okay, you can go brush your teeth now, or you can get a spanking and then go brush your teeth. That kind of a choice. It's not much of a choice, is it? Not much of a choice, but that's the kind of choice that God's giving his people. Either you can go into bondage, into captivity, and serve under Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians, or you can die. Now, neither one of those two prospects really are very appealing, are they? Which would you pick? Zedekiah chose poorly throughout his reign, as did many of the other kings. But he eventually did wind up better off than some some of the last few kings. And you've got to realize that, you know, some of the kings in Judah's history reigned for 40, 50 years, and things like that. These last few kings, about four of them, covered 12 or 13 years. They were only reigning short periods of time. They were one in and then another one in. They were reigning, they were in office, so to speak, less time than our presidents are. But kings were supposed to be in there for life. So they didn't have time to do a whole lot. They didn't have time to really get in there and get comfortable in their role. In fact, a couple of them only served for a matter of months. They were only there for a matter of months. And so he warns King Zedekiah, if you will bring your neck under the yoke, if you will submit, if you will capitulate, if you will give up and surrender and allow yourself to be captured, you'll live. Now, do you know many kings who would accept that? Now, we just had a situation not long ago with Saddam Hussein, and they made that offer to him. You know, you just step down. Just give up. What did he do? He went and hid in a hole in the ground to try to keep, do anything, keep his soldiers fighting while he's hiding in the hopes of keeping things going a little longer. See, that's the way it is with kings. Most of the time, they're very arrogant, very egotistical, thinking only of themselves, and very self-centered. Here's another example. He's just telling, all you have to do is just surrender. He's not about to do that. We know, can you imagine, if some of us tried to tell President Bush, well, all you've got to do over there in Iraq, you just surrender. No way, we're winning. We're not going to surrender. Well, Zedekiah was not about to surrender. This is the problem when we think we have the power in ourselves, rather than realizing that the power is in God's hands. You say, you know, well, we're winning. Well, maybe so. But if God decides to turn the tide, no army on this earth could stop him. In fact, all the armies on this earth put together couldn't stop him. When he decides something's going to be a certain way, that's the way it is. In chapter 28, we see Hananiah. Now, Hananiah was a prophet of sorts. Verse 30 of chapter 28 says, then Hananiah the prophet took the yoke from off the prophet Jeremiah's neck and broke it, or break it, the King James says. I always thought it was broke. But he broke that thing up. In essence, saying, and as he continues to say, no, God's going to break the yoke of Nebuchadnezzar. We're not going to have to serve him. We're going to be free. We're going to continue as we always have, and the Lord's going to protect his people. And these kinds of things, as he and very arrogantly and proclaiming them, that Jeremiah, of course, had been a false prophet. That's what he was saying. Jeremiah said, you're going to be under a yoke of bondage to Nebuchadnezzar. Hananiah breaks the yoke and says, no, that's not right. Well, in verse 13, God has another message for Hananiah. He tells Jeremiah, go and tell Hananiah, saying, thus saith the Lord, thou hast broken the yokes of wood, but thou shalt make that for them yokes of iron. You ever do something like that? You get yourself in a little bit of trouble, and so you think you're going to figure a way out of it, and you wind up making yourself twice the trouble you had before. Jeremiah says, here you are, we yokes of wood. Hananiah breaks them, and Jeremiah says, okay, because of your attitude there, here's what God says to you. Instead of yokes of wood, now they're going to be made out of iron. Now you take anything that's made out of wood, and it can be pretty heavy. This podium, this pulpit up here, is pretty heavy. But a couple of men can pick it up and carry it fairly easily. Now you make this thing out of iron, and then what? It'd probably take every man you could find to pick the thing up, and they wouldn't carry it very far if it was made out of iron. And that's what Jeremiah is saying. You know, you're making your situation worse because of your arrogant attitude that you're having toward God. You see, God is the kind of God who doesn't take well to being insulted and to being rejected and to having somebody just look him in the face and say, no, I'm not going to do what you say. He doesn't take to that very well. He doesn't react well to being told things like that. And then he has a special message for Hananiah himself. Verse 16 says, therefore thus saith the Lord, behold, I will cast thee from off the face of the earth. This year thou shalt die, because thou hast taught rebellion against the Lord. So Hananiah the prophet died the same year in the seventh month. In fact, only 2 months later. It was in the fifth month that Jeremiah had come with his message about the yokes. And here in the seventh month, Hananiah died. Jeremiah said, because you have taught people to rebel against God. There are going to be a lot of people in this world who are going to have to answer to God for that crime, teaching others to rebel against Him. Some have done it very deliberately and very boldly. They've stood up and said, there is no God, or something of that nature. Others have done it very subtly by saying, it's okay. We can do this little thing here, and it'll be all right. It won't. And then they go on, we can do this little thing, and it won't. It matters when you're rebelling against God, but a lot of people have taught others to rebel against God. In chapter 29, Jeremiah sends a letter to the exiles, those who have already been carried into Babylon. Now remember, earlier he had already established that the captivity is going to last for 70 years. 70 years is a pretty long time to be in captivity. If you were going to live in a place and you knew you were going to live there for 70 years, what would you do? Well, you'd probably find a place to settle down. You'd get you a house, some land, live there. Now if you think, I'm just passing through, I'll be here for 6 months or a year, and then I'm moving on. Well, you wouldn't want to invest yourself in that place too much. You wouldn't go to the trouble of finding out. You'd just rent a place somewhere and say, I'm going to be moving on. But here we have, here's what Jeremiah has said. Okay, they're going 70 years. And so here's what he tells them. He says, build yourselves houses and dwell in them, and plant gardens and eat the fruit of them. Take wives and beget sons and daughters, and take wives for your sons. Now notice how long he's talking. These little sons are just going to be there a little while. Okay, what did he say? Build a house. How long does it take to build a house? It takes a little while to build a house, doesn't it? And then he says, and plant gardens and eat the fruit of them. Well, now that takes a few months to plant a garden and then for it to grow and you eat the fruit. That's going to take a few months. And then he says, take wives. Well, depending on how attractive the fella is, that can take anywhere from a few days to, might never happen for some, but that's going to take a while. And he says, and beget sons and daughters. Well, now I know, that takes 9 or 10 months, at least, right there. But then he says, and take wives for your sons. Oh, how old's your son going to be when he can take the wife? Well, I hope my son's not going to be any younger than at least 19 or 20 before he starts thinking about that. So, here we're talking about, you're going to take your sons and find wives for them. You're going to be there a long time, is what Jeremiah's saying. Get comfortable. Make it a home, because that's where you're staying. You might as well get used to it. And then he says, too, and give your daughters to their husbands, that they may bear sons and daughters, that he may be increased there and not diminished. I think what had happened, if they didn't perpetuate their line, if they didn't continue the Jewish race, what would have happened? In 70 years, a race could die out, couldn't it? Yeah, sure could. Now in China, they have a law now that each family can only have one child. Now, it's kind of cruel and enforced in a couple of generations, we're going to have half as many people in our country. Because they're overpopulated. They're crowded. There are a billion people living in China. And so they figure if they can keep this up in 100 years, there'll only be half a billion. Which won't be such a strain on their resources. So, mathematically, see, that's the thing. If you don't reproduce, you die out. I don't want to put any pressure on Xander, but he's the last Pasley in the Pasley line. Unless there's another little one growing over there that I don't know about yet. But he's the last one. Oh, a lot of pressure. He doesn't have to. I was the last one. No pressure. But yeah, that's the way it goes. That's why some families, they can only, their history died out. They didn't have any offspring. They didn't reproduce, and so there's no record of those people. Entire nations of people have disappeared because they didn't reproduce. So what he's telling them is, you go and you do what you would have done if you were living here so that the nation can increase and continue. Why? What's so important about this nation? Well, we know what it is. The Christ, the Messiah, is coming through this nation. If it dies out, the whole world's lost. It's got to continue. And so Jeremiah gives them some advice, and then he says, and seek the peace of the city whither I have caused you to be carried away captive, and pray unto the Lord for it, for in the peace thereof shall ye have peace. He said, yes, you're going to be captives, you're going to be servants, but you be content and pray for peace in that circumstance. Because that's just the way God wanted it to be for that period of time. No sense continuing to rebel against it and cause no end of strife and fighting and wars and death just because you don't like the way that God has decided things are to be. In chapter 30, though, Jeremiah turns toward one of his rare segments of hope. And he says, he talks in these two chapters, 30 and 31, about the restoration of Israel. Talks about how it's going to be. In verse 5 and following, he says, for thus saith the Lord, we have heard a voice of trembling, of fear, and not of peace. Ask ye now and see whether a man doth travail with child. Wherefore do I see every man with his hands on his loins as a woman in travail, and all faces are turned into paleness. God, through Jeremiah, uses some vivid imagery. Imagine a man trying to have a child. He said, no, men don't have children. Well, then why is it I'm seeing men holding their bellies? They're holding themselves like a woman who's in labor with a child. Why is that? What's wrong? Well, they're suffering. They're in pain. They're in fear. They're in turmoil. They're in trouble. But he lets them know that it's not going to be forever. Verse 24, he says, the fierce anger of the Lord shall not return until he has done it, and until he has performed the intent of his heart. In the latter days, ye shall consider it. Or in other words, you'll understand it. And we sing the song, we'll understand it all by and by. Well, that's what Jeremiah's telling. You'll understand it later. But then in verse 31, or chapter 31 rather, and verse 1, he says, at the same time, saith the Lord, will I be the God of all the families of Israel, and they shall be my people. Thus saith the Lord, the people which were left of the sword found grace in the wilderness, even Israel, when I went to cause him to rest. You notice how God speaks in the past tense, as though this is something that's already happened, because in his mind it has. The people are fixing to go into captivity, but in his mind, he already has seen the other side when they're going to have rest. The remnant that's going to remain, those that are left from the sword have found grace in the wilderness. He's already determined it. He's already seen it. He said that at the same time, I'll be the God of all the families of Israel, and they shall be my people. He's looking to the future, but he's speaking of it as though it's the past, because to God, there's no difference. The past, the present, the future, he can see them all. He sees them all. But he does promise the restoration, and he goes on farther talking about how they need to sing and shout and make back home. Become a bride and bride. Then we come to chapter 32. And here Jeremiah buys a field. Verse 7. Behold, Hanamiel the son of Shallum, thy uncle, shall come unto thee. This is God speaking to Jeremiah, saying, buy thee my field that is in Anathoth, for the right of redemption is thine to buy it. Well, that's what God told me. This is what's going to happen. Well, lo and behold, very next verse. So Hananiel, my uncle's son, came to me in the court of the prison, according to the word of the Lord, and said unto me, buy my field. And just as God had said it would. And he said, then I knew that this was the word of the Lord. Because it came to pass. Do you remember that from Deuteronomy? If the word comes to pass, then you'll know that it's a true prophecy. So Jeremiah didn't know that this was the word of the Lord for sure until, sure enough, here he came. Just like the word had said. Well, then he knew, he says, that this was the word of the Lord. And I bought the field of Hanamiel, my uncle's son, that was in Anathoth, and weighed him the money, 17 shekels. Now, what was the point of that? Why is Jeremiah buying this field in the land of Israel when everybody fixes to get carted off to Babylon? What was the point? Well, the message here is that even though you're leaving, you're going to be coming back. Well, not maybe not Jeremiah himself. He might have been old and dead before they came back. But the idea being that the people of Israel are going to be coming back. It's not forever. You're going to go, but they're going to come back too. And a lot of people do that today. They maybe have some land here somewhere near us, and they may move off, and they may work somewhere else in the big city or up north or out west somewhere, and they go, and they may stay there 30 or 40 years, and then they retire, and they come back home to that piece of property that they were holding on to just for that purpose, to have a place to go, to have a place to retire. A lot of people do that. They may even have a house, and they may be renting that house out for 30 years while they're off somewhere else, and then they come back, and they live in that house that they had bought. Well, that's what Jeremiah was doing. He was buying this land to show that he knew that the children of Israel were going to be coming back. If they weren't coming back, it would have been foolish for him to buy the land. To buy land that's never, if it's going to be taken over by somebody else, and your descendants are never going to get it. Of course, some people buy things just to have an inheritance to give to their descendants, to give to their children or grandchildren. And that may have been what Jeremiah was thinking, that he would give this land to his descendants when they came back from the land of Babylon. Then we come to chapter 33. Promise of restoration. Again, Jeremiah pointing out the hope. Verse 6, he says, behold, I will bring it health and cure, and I will cure them, and will reveal unto them the abundance of peace and truth, and I will cause the captivity of Judah and the captivity of Israel to return, and will build them as at the first, and I will cleanse them from all their iniquity whereby they have sinned against me, and I will pardon all their iniquities whereby they have sinned and whereby they have transgressed against me. See, God can't just take them back in their sinful state. He's going to have to purify them first. He's going to have to cleanse them. And that's what he did for 70 years in Babylon, is he cleansed those people. Now, we look at the people in Jesus' time and we say, they didn't seem very cleansed. They were still some wicked people. They were hypocrites. They were doing all sorts of things to get around the law of God. They were making their own laws and putting them in the place of God. What are you talking about? Well, you've got to remember that the people of Jeremiah's time were given to idolatry, worshiping false gods. And they had been for quite some time. Ever since the time of Solomon, they had been doing this. Off and on, every once in a while a king would come up that would try to clear the land of the idols, but he'd only live for so long, and then the people would be right back in. And I'm sure even during his reign, the people would have their little secret idols and their little secret cubbyholes in their houses somewhere. And they were still worshiping those false gods, even though the king had declared that they should. But after the children of Israel returned from Babylon, they didn't worship idols. They may have had a lot of problems still, but God cured them of one to this day, the Jewish people, they may be, you know, they may have given up their faith entirely. They may be Jews in lineage only and not practice the Jewish religion at all. But I guarantee you, you don't find them worshiping idols, even the ones that don't follow the Jewish religion. They don't follow idols. If they're not going to follow their ancestors' religion, they're not going to follow anything. They would never convert to Buddhism and worship Buddha or something of that nature. God cures them of that. He cleansed them of that particular sin, even if some of the others remained from generation to generation. And of course, we know that God cannot keep people, or will not keep people, from being what they themselves want to be. He's never going to make someone be something that they don't want to be. He allows people free will. In chapter 34, Jeremiah gives a warning to Zedekiah, verse 2. Thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, go and speak to Zedekiah, king of Judah, and tell him, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will give this city into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall burn it with fire. And thou shalt not escape out of his hand, but shall surely be taken and delivered into his hand. And thine eyes shall behold the eyes of the king of Babylon, and he shall speak with thee mouth to mouth. And thou shalt go to Babylon. Well, Zedekiah is still being warned, but he's still having trouble listening. But he also tells Zedekiah, you're not going to die by the sword. You're going to die in peace with the burning, with the, you know, all the funeral rituals that your ancestors had. Then in verse number 10, Zedekiah has proclaimed that all of the Hebrew servants should be free. Now when all the princes and all the people which had entered into the covenant heard that everyone should let his manservant and everyone his maidservant go free, that none should serve themselves of them anymore, then they obeyed and let them go. Well, that sounds pretty good, didn't it? Zedekiah is doing some reforming. He's getting the people to do some good things, right? Well, let's look at verse 11. But afterward they turned and caused the servants and the handmaids whom they had let go free to return and brought them into subjection for servants and for handmaids. So they let them go, all right. It's like, kind of like, well, we'll let you go today and then we'll put you back to work tomorrow. They didn't really free them. They just tried to put up the show that that's what happened. Then in chapter 35, we read about the Rechabites. The Rechabites were an interesting group of men. Jeremiah got them and tried to get them to drink some wine. Odd thing for a prophet to try to do. But he tried to get them to drink some wine. But they said, we will drink no wine. For Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, ye shall drink no wine, neither ye nor your sons forever. Neither shall ye build houses, nor sow seed, nor plant vineyard, nor have any. But all your days ye shall dwell in tents, that ye may live many days in the land where ye be strangers. So they were strangers in the land. Now here's what God had to say about that situation. He's using this as a message. Here are these people. They weren't even Israelites. They weren't even Jews. They weren't even God's people. But they did what their father had told them. For generations, they were keeping God's, their father's word. And God says to the Jews, the words of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, that he commanded his sons not to drink wine, are performed. For unto this day, they drink none, but obey their father's commandment. Notwithstanding, I have spoken unto you, rising early and speaking, but ye hearken not unto me. Here's a man that commanded his sons not to do something, and they kept it. They didn't do it. But here I am, I'm God, and I've told you to do some things and not to do some things, and you won't listen to me. Now say, these people over here are more righteous than you are. You know, you call yourselves the children of God, but those people over there honor their father. They do what they follow the commandments they've been given, and you don't. The hypocrisy of the people is pointed out. Chapter 36. Jehoiakim, another king. Verse 2, it says, take thee a roll of a book, this is to Jeremiah, and write therein And it came to pass that when Jehudah had read three or four leaves, he cut it with the penknife and cast it into the fire until all the roll was consumed in the fire that was on the hearth. Because he didn't want to listen. But it's kind of interesting. You see, you can't destroy God's word that easily. The king, long since dead, and by most people forgot. The book of Jeremiah, I hold right here in my hand, hold right there in your hand. Well, the king may have burned a copy of it, but he couldn't stop God's word. In fact, here's what God says to Jeremiah in verse 28. Take thee again another roll, and write in it all the former words that were in the first roll, which Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, hath burned. It's not that easy to get away from God. We can't just take our Bibles and throw them in the fire and burn them up and say, got rid of that. That's what the book is. Just because he burned it up, do you think that was going to change what was written there? See, he can destroy the paper and the ink, or the scrolls and the ink. He can destroy that. But he can't destroy the God who gave the word in the first place. And whether those words were written down for him to read or not, they were still just as factual and just as accurate. Chapter 37, Jeremiah goes to prison again. Then said Jeremiah, it is false, I fall not away to the Chaldeans. They accused him of being a traitor, being a spy for the Chaldeans. But he hearkened not to him, so Urijah took Jeremiah and brought him to the princes. Wherefore the princes were wroth with Jeremiah, and smote him, and put him in prison in the house of Jonathan the scribe, for they had made that the prison. When Jeremiah was entered into the dungeon and into the cabin, and Jeremiah had remained there many days, and then Zedekiah the king sent for him to bring him to it. So here he is, he's thrown in prison now, because he's been telling people what God has to say. Well, that's not the worst of it. Chapter 38, he gets thrown into a well. Verse 2, thus saith the Lord, he that remaineth in this city shall die by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence. But he that goeth forth to the Chaldeans shall live, for he shall have his life for a prey, and shall live. Again, Jeremiah is saying some uncomfortable things to these people. Surrender. Go out there, and they'll let you live. You stay in here, you're going to die. Better get out of this city, he tells them. Verse 6 says, then took they Jeremiah and cast him into the dungeon of Malchiah the son of Hemalech, that was in the court of the prison. And they let down Jeremiah with cords, and in the dungeon. And in the dungeon there was no water, but mire. So Jeremiah sunk in the mire, instead of a big deep pit. And there wasn't any water in it, but there was some mud, and he sunk down into that mud, and stuck there. Imagine how uncomfortable and how unpleasant the situation that must have been. And of course, there was nothing for him to drink, really, except that mud. Had some moisture in it, but it would have been hard to get it out. Nothing for him to eat, no bread. But then Zedekiah questions Jeremiah again. He gets him and brings him to it and questions him. And he says, in verse 20, it says, but Jeremiah said, they shall not deliver thee. Zedekiah is worried that if the Jews who are already in captivity get a hold of him, they're not going to be too happy with him, because he rebelled against the king of Babylon. And so they know it's his fault. Now the king of Babylon was leaving them alone, letting them stay in their little land and do their little thing, but then Zedekiah decides he's going to rebel. And so the king of Babylon came and captured a bunch of them. And so he knows those people are not going to be happy with me, because it's my fault that they're in captivity now. And so Jeremiah assures him, they shall not deliver thee. Obey, I beseech thee, the voice of the Lord which I speak unto thee, so it shall be well unto thee, and thy soul shall live. Isn't that what we're telling people constantly? Listen to what the Lord says, and it'll be well with you, and your soul shall live. Listen to the word of the Lord. Obey the voice of the Lord. And yet, so many people, just like Zedekiah, refuse to listen. In chapter 39, finally, the fall of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is taken. In the ninth year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, in the tenth month, came Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, and all his army against Jerusalem, and they besieged it. And in the 11th year of Zedekiah, in the fourth month, the ninth day of the month, the city was broken up. For nearly 2 years, the city was under siege. How much food you got in your house? Doesn't that last 2 years? Me neither. For 2 years, the Babylonian army surrounded the city of Jerusalem and didn't let anything in or out. Now, the Babylonians had food coming in to them, I'm sure. But they weren't letting any get into that city. You remember what we were talking about earlier about how bad things were going to be and how Jeremiah said that women were going to eat their own children and things of that nature? After 2 years of not having anything to eat, some folks would probably get hungry enough to do just that. After you've chewed on your furniture, and after you've eaten enough dirt and enough grass, and your yard's bare because you've eaten all the grass in it, after a while, you're going to still want something. Those people, they suffered. For 2 years, they suffered. But they finally, the city fell. They gave up. They couldn't hold out any longer. And they broke through. Then verse 6, it says, then the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah in Riblah before his eyes. Also, the king of Babylon slew all the nobles of Judah. Remember what Jeremiah promised Zedekiah, though? You're not going to die by the sword. Killed his son, killed all the nobles. Moreover, he put out Zedekiah's eyes and bound him with chains to carry him to Babylon. He didn't kill him. Now, sometimes you might think there are worse things than death. Can you imagine? Watching your children be put to death and then having your eyes gouged out. Last thing you see, be your own children put to death. And there are some things that are worse than dying yourself. But here we have it then. Fall of Jerusalem. Babylon has captured the city. Can't get any worse from here, I don't think. We've still got 13 more chapters of Jeremiah to go next time. We'll see how it concludes. If you're here tonight, you have a need to respond to the invitation. For whatever reason it might be, perhaps you have not been obeying the word of the Lord. You need to do that. There's no time like the present. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation,